I'm Leslie McShane, and this is The New Old You, a place where women over 50 are able to come together to figure out who they are now and what they want as they move forward into this new phase of life. What better way than to do this rediscovering together with guests that can help us figure all of it out? It's time to make some space for yourself because honestly, you deserve it. This is The New Old You, and I'm Leslie McShane, and welcome back to another episode in our Back to School and Off to College series. I'm very excited to have back on the podcast Marnie Levine. If you haven't heard Marnie previously, I encourage you to go back and listen to episode 62 on finding the right college fit. And then we also did a bonus episode around March 27th that we did about what to expect from a spring break college visit. Marnie is an independent full-service college advisor working with students from eighth grade to graduate school. Her goal is to help you and your student navigate what to focus on in high school and then find the perfect college fit. Her mission statement is to minimize stress for the family she works for by completing the process the way a mother would do it if the mother was a professional. Today, we're going to be focusing on families that have teens entering their junior and senior years of high school, two very important years when it comes to preparing for college and then choosing a college or a trade. Please welcome back to the podcast, Marnie Levine. Hey, Marnie, how are you?
Hi, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing great. Welcome back to the podcast. I've only had a couple people on more than once, and you're like right up on top of the list.
Well, I am very honored. I am so happy to be back. I love talking to you and about college and everything else.
Well, you know, I could sit and talk to you forever about college and college visits and athletic recruiting and all that. But as I mentioned, we're going to be talking about these crucial junior and senior years. But before we start, can you, if somebody hasn't heard you on the podcast before, can you give us a little refresh on who you are, what you do, and all of that stuff?
Absolutely. So I am an independent educational consultant or college advisor, and my role in the process is to help families along the college admissions journey. So we address together as a team everything that it takes to get through high school, from transcript reviews and activity discussions and essays and filling out applications to interview prep, all the way through making the college decision where you're going to go. So I guide families along that journey, and I hope that I can minimize their stress. That's my goal.
So as part of the series, like I said, we're going to be talking about the junior and senior years. How important are these 2 years of high school? And is there one year that's more important than the other?
Absolutely. Junior year is 100% the most important of high school years. And the reason that it is so important is that it is the last chance for a student to really show an upward trend in their grades, to make sure they're taking the highest rigor. And at the end of junior year, that grade point average is the one that they're going to use to apply to college. So everything that they've done in freshman year, sophomore year, junior year should show a progression upward. And then in senior year, it's really important to continue that trend. But in most cases, colleges are going to use the grade point average from the end of junior year. So that's why junior is the most important year. It's important senior year to keep those grades up, but the thing that they're looking at is the grade point average from the end of junior year.
So would you say that GPA is the main focus of the junior year, or are there other things that are just as important to be focusing on in the junior year?
Yeah, Unfortunately, kids have to address everything in junior year, which is
it's all junior year.
Yeah, it's a lot on these kids in junior. But when it comes to college admissions, the first thing a college, any college, is going to look at is going to be a student's academic record. So their grade point average and the rigor of the classes that they chose. That's first. After that, there's testing, standardized testing, SATs or ACTs, where, you know, a student is going to or not going to take them, because that's now optional since COVID at a lot of places. Then a school is going to look at the picture of who that student is extracurricularly. What are they doing inside school, outside school, to show who they are and how they're going to interact within a college community. So that's another important piece. What kind of human are you? Mm-hmm. What are you going to bring to the table when you come to our campus? So that's really important. So it's important that kids choose their activities wisely. They show some leadership in their own way. It doesn't mean you have to be the president of a club or a treasurer of a club. Whatever you are doing, you just need to show a deep interest and curiosity and passion for that particular activity. That can be leadership. And then at the end of junior year, schools are also going to be looking for those teacher recommendations. Who did students ask for teacher recommendations? And what do those teachers have to say about those students? And then, of course, after junior year, right in the summer before senior year, it's college essays. And that's a really big piece of the puzzle.
Okay. So going back to schedule and AP classes, per se, because I know a lot of those happen in junior year. I mean, I think you can take a few your freshman and sophomore years, but when you're in your junior year, you're really starting to bring them on. I mean, should you be taking one? Should you be taking more than that? Should you not take four? I mean, getting threes and fours, does that matter? Or just
So taking the most rigorous schedule that you can succeed in is very important to colleges. So there isn't really a hard and fast rule on how many AP classes to take. If your school offers one or two and you want to try them, that's great. Freshman or sophomore year, as junior year comes along, if you can get a B or better in an AP class, then it will have some value for you. Same thing with senior year. And you will only be judged based on what's available at your school. So if one school offers one and one school offers 33, if, you know, wherever you fall in that realm is what a college is going to judge you against. So if somebody takes 33, then that kid is probably going to get the spot at that college. Mm-hmm. But if somebody takes five or six or eight, then they're going to talk about that in context of the school. So that's first. You should never just take an AP class just to take one. You should only take an AP class if it's a subject that you are strong in, that you're interested in. I suggest core classes first. I think core subjects, so English, math, social science, actual science, and foreign language. Those are the most important ones. There are AP electives like computer science or art. But you should only take the ones that really match what's right for you. That's first. The next piece with the APs is it really doesn't matter. The test is not actually part of college admissions. So reporting threes, fours, or fives can help an application, but taking the class and not reporting those will not hurt your application. So if you take the AP exam and you don't do well, that's not going to hurt you.
That's good information to know, because I think that there are a lot of kids and a lot of parents who feel like you have to at least get a three for a college to consider that.
Well, you need to get at least a 3 for a college to consider giving you credit for that.
Yeah.
So that's a different piece of the puzzle. So when I work with students and they ask about AP classes, I tell them that for our purposes of college admissions, taking the class, taking the rigorous choice is what I care about, because I have to report that with them in their common application. But the score on the exam is something that the college will receive after they decide what college they're going to. And the college will then decide, will they give a student credit for that 3, 4, or 5? So it's very college dependent. And again, if a student gets a 3, 4, or 5 and can get credit for it, that's amazing. That's one less class they'll have to take in college. But if they don't get a 3, 4, or 5 and they don't submit them to the colleges will never know. And it's a moot point.
Yeah. And I will mention, this is kind of a personal aside. My daughter took a bunch of AP classes and she got some 4s and 5s and was able to get credit. But because she had so many credits going into her freshman year, there weren't as many classes that she was able to take that would have been a good transition for her into her first semester of college. And she had to take some harder classes. And I mean, and it is a big jump. I don't care how smart you are in high school. It is a big jump to go from high school to college level courses and to have to maybe bypass some freshman level courses because you've already tested out and you have to take harder classes. You know, that is a huge learning curve. So, you know, I would also give the advice to anybody that asks me of, you know, don't just skirt past some classes that you might be able to take your freshman year, because you might need some easy little classes to help you in your GPA.
Absolutely. And, you know, those foreign language and math, those are the ones that kids typically place out of and into higher levels in their harder class.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you definitely do need some of those 100 level classes that you can take in freshman year to boost your grade point average, also to make life a little bit easier at school.
Right. It's so hard. That first semester is hard.
Exactly. And it's a hard transition for kids, and it's a hard transition for parents who are listening to their kids say how stressed they are. So, you know, bulking up on every single AP exam and being nerve-wracked that, you know, you haven't gotten a 4 or 5 and you're not going to get credit for it. You are getting credit as far as the college is concerned for rigor,
right?
You know, for getting into a college. They're going to appreciate that you challenged yourself and you took a difficult course. And that's what colleges really care about.
Yeah. So let's move on to testing. The ACT and SAT, because like anything, there is a strategy of when you take it, should you get tutoring, how many times should you take it, should you take it like 3 months in a row, or should you take it in December and then again in March? What are you finding is the best strategy?
Yeah, so right now, testing is optional at a lot of colleges.
Is it still really?
At a lot of colleges. There are some states where it is not optional at a state level. So the state of Florida, the state of Georgia, the state of Tennessee have all said they're going to require testing. So at their public institutions, they require testing. There are other states that have said now from now until forever, they're going to be test optional. There are other schools that are saying they have interim test optional policies that they're going to address as time goes on. So right now, my best advice is to take the test,
right.
At least attempt it, because if you don't, you could be limiting yourself out of some of those states or some schools that you really just don't know yet that you're going to apply to or want to apply to. So I suggest, yes, study for the test, and yes, take the test and let's see where you land. Mm-hmm. So there are two standardized tests, SATs and ACTs. It does not make a difference which one you take. You can take one, you can take both. Colleges do not prefer one over the other. I do think that most kids should begin their test prep in the middle of Algebra 2 or at the end of Algebra 2, depending on the year that they're taking Algebra 2. You do need to get mostly through Algebra 2 to succeed at that test. Mm-hmm. So most kids will take it sometime, like you just mentioned, December and March of their junior year if they're on level math. If they're a year ahead, then they get that advantage. If they finished Algebra 2, either in freshman or sophomore year, then they have extra time that they could get those tests in. I do think that most tutors, I'm not an SAT or ACT tutor, but the tutors that I consult with, they like at least 12 weeks to tutor a student before either one of those exams to get ready. If a student wants to take advantage on their own and not hire a tutor, there are so many great online resources. Khan Academy has partnered with College Board to create amazing free interactive testing for SAT. ACT.org has its own version of that. There are plenty of things that you could do. There's SAT question of the day, ACT question of the day. You can get it right to your inbox. I think I've told you this before. I'm very geeky when it comes to vocabulary. I think vocabulary cards are amazing. You can improve your vocab. I think that will always help. And that costs like $10. That's not a big deal. It's not as huge of an investment as, you know, hiring a tutor for this is. But there are lots of things that kids can do on their own. There are YouTube tutorials when it comes to this stuff. So there's plenty of ways that kids can do it for little or no money. But I do think you should be familiar with the test. You should always take the PSAT in school. You should try to get practice ACT if you can and see which test is better for you before you just jump right in.
Okay, I like that. So yeah. Find out which of the test is best for you. And then always, you know, you get a baseline, but then you, even though it may be test optional where you're looking to go, you never know where you may go. Always try to do your best.
Always do your best. Because a good score is still, even though it's test optional, that mm-hmm. doesn't mean you can't send it. So a good score, a score in the middle 50% of the prior year's published SAT or ACT range will always help you. You want to fall in that middle 50% of the prior year's published range. And if you do, then you should send your test scores in most cases.
So in junior year, obviously the college search starts heating up. What do juniors need to be looking towards in the college search in their junior year?
So in junior year, I think that students should really be doing their due diligence. This is a huge decision for them. They are going to spend 4 years, hopefully, at this next home of theirs. And I think they really need to have an idea why they want to go to a particular school, mm-hmm. What they're going to study at that school, what they're going to do extracurricularly at that school, who are the people they're going to be surrounded by at that school. And in order to do that research, they can do virtual information sessions, which are a new thing also post-COVID. Colleges have tons of great content online as well. You can follow a school's Office of Admissions on Instagram, on Twitter, on TikTok, on Facebook. They put out tons of information and you can see, are there students like you at that school? Are there kids doing things that you want to do? Are the teams great that you want to follow? Are the professors accessible? You can learn so much of that online. Once you figure out if you're interested in a particular school, and also if it's possible that you're admissible to that school. You don't want to just look at the top 20 schools in this country and assume you're going to get into them. Mm-hmm. So it's really important that you look at what type of student goes to that school. Are they super motivated? Are they all A plus kids? Are they perfect SAT, ACT score kids? Have they all done research or published it? Or are they average kids, right? Are you an average kid? Are you going to fit in there? Are you a slightly above average? Are you slightly below? Be honest with yourself, because you want to get to the top of the next class. That's where a lot of the opportunity is. So I think you really have to look at published admission rates, acceptance rates for the year before, and see, you know, just how competitive was it to get into this school? Am I going to be a good fit at this school? Is this school going to be a good fit for me? Once you do some online research, you got to go to your parents and say, hey, we need to get on this college campus and do some visits. I always tell kids that in-person is obviously the best. Of course, during COVID, that was hard. Now it's more open. We can get back on college campuses. So go do an information session, do a campus tour, reach out to friends, relatives, friends of friends, whoever you know on that college campus, and ask for 5 or 10 minutes of their time. You know, we talked about this in our other podcast, you and I, you know, all kids from rich to poor, they're all starving. They'll all trade 10 minutes of their time
for a hamburger,
for a hamburger, for a cup of coffee at Starbucks, or for ice cream. So, you know, everybody will happily brag about their school or show their dorm room. You know, so make sure you're getting on the college campus and make sure you're sitting in the middle of that campus and looking around and seeing, do you see kids who look like you? Do you see kids who sound like you? Do you see kids that you would want to be friends with? Because that kind of determines whether or not it's a good fit for you. Mm-hmm. Then you move on to the application process.
Okay. So what about, and this is given the cost of college, as he says, when do we start looking for scholarship opportunities? I mean, not specific to a college or a school, but that are available from different institutions in our town, or, I mean, is that a junior year sort of thing? You start looking for those?
Yeah. So you can look for scholarships at any time, really. I mean, there are some scholarships contests that are out there for eighth graders, you know, 13, 14 year olds who can apply for those scholarships. I think that it's really hard to get those big national scholarships. So I like a very micro approach. So I think, just as you just said, look locally. And sophomore year, junior year especially, that's when you really look locally. Look where your parents are employed. Look at any organization that you volunteered for. Look for any organization that might be important to your family. Look for anything that's available through your guidance office at your high school, through your town. Those are the places to start, because the micro ones are easier to get than the big macro national ones.
Right.
It's less competition and it's more likely that you will apply and receive them. It's a big job to apply for scholarships. So what I usually tell kids is, if they have a big need for scholarship money, yes, start junior year. If they don't have a huge need for the scholarship money and it would just be like kind of nice to have, which some kids are lucky enough to have, then I say apply to schools that might give you merit money without you applying for an extra scholarship, or athletic money without applying for an extra scholarship. And if not, if those don't happen either, then once you know the school that you're going to, then go to that school and look for their scholarships, because you're more likely to get one from that particular school if you fit than you are a giant national one. So again, that's kind of micro as well. And that would be more senior year.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. That's good. I don't think that we talked about that in the last episode we did. about looking.
We didn't talk about that. It's, you know, it's a big thing. There are also, by the way, there are tons of these, you know, websites and apps, Scholly and College Express and Unigo, that have contests and that you can just follow them and look and write an essay if you're a great writer. I also think that competitions are a great way to sometimes get a little extra money. So if you're a great writer, you can write and submit something and see if you win a prize. Same thing with a math competition, a coding competition, a hackathon. Sometimes they will offer monetary prizes that you can use towards college.
I will say that applying for scholarships can become a full-time job too. I mean, so you really have to, I think, drill down your approach and what you want to spend your time on.
It's extraordinarily time consuming because you, in many cases, scholarships are also named, you know, the John Doe Fund, and you don't really know what the John Doe Fund is and if you are eligible or could possibly win it, you know, so you have to really dig in and see what fits you. And then you have to write more essays. You have to fill out more applications. So I usually tell kids to do that. Yes, a little bit in junior year before they're filling out their college applications, then write their college application essays, fill out their college applications, see if any of the essays that they've written might work for a scholarship. And go back and relook at, again, those more micro, smaller scholarship funds that they might get something on a more local level.
Right. Oh, that's great advice. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, use what you've got because you're right. Yeah. And it does become a full-time job. And usually it's the mama's full-time job, not the kids. Exactly. The kid may be writing the essay, but it's usually the mamas that are finding
the
opportunity.
Filling out all those name, address, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So that brings me to, so how can parents best support their juniors?
I think that helping them to stay organized, helping them to stay on track, that's really important. I am not a spreadsheet person. I'm a list person, but I've got lots of spreadsheet clients. However your family organizes, I think it's really important for the parents to help with the organization. I think the kids just remember in their head, oh yeah, I liked that school and I liked that school. And they're not exactly sure why. They don't really know what the costs are. They don't really know what is flying add to it or how often they can come home if they drive. So I think that by keeping some sort of organization system, the parents can definitely help. I think that by setting some small goals, maybe every month, you know, as a family, by being clear with your family's parameters, that is really, really, really important. If you know that you are not going to allow your student to fly somewhere, that's something to tell them right away. If you know that you will not be helping them to pay for college, that's something right away. Finances are the most difficult conversation to have, and they get harder and harder as a student gets more and more in love with a school that they fall in love with. And then all of a sudden parents have to pull the rug out because college is really, really expensive.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important to be, to have real financial conversations nice and early. And then that way a student does not fall in love with a school that you can't afford because there's amazing schools at every price point.
Right.
And there's no reason for them to fall in love with a school that you can't afford or they would have to take hundreds of thousands of dollars of loans out for.
You don't want them to do that.
You don't want them to do that. And to me, you know, not when there's amazing educations everywhere and places where they might get some merit money. And that's a place where parents can help. Because either they can consult with an advisor like me, or they can do some research on their own right on college websites. It will show, is your student eligible for some merit money here? And then you could say, hey, you know what? I saw College X might give you $12,000 a year to come there. Let's go look. And then jump in a car and go look, you know, and see if your kid gets excited about that school. So I think organization, support, mental health support is so important. Really, really, really crucial right now. Not letting these kids get overstressed by the process, not letting them believe that while you know, the news does say that college admissions has gotten harder and harder, and it has because there's more applications. That does not mean that kids are not going to college. More and more kids are going to college every year. So they will go somewhere. So keep them, you know, confident and positive. That's really important. So I think mental health, I think some of the planning, again, in trips, some of the motivations, buying the sweatshirts, and listen to what your student is telling you about their feelings about college, because you may want them to go to your alma mater, or you may want them to get on a plane, or you may want them to go to a particular state and they may not want to do that. Or they may not want to go to college at all.
Right.
You really need to have some open conversations and listen to what our children are saying.
Yeah, that's great advice. That's great advice. So what about that crucial summer between junior and senior year? Is there something that a junior needs? I mean, do they need to work? Do they need to find an internship? Do they need to just be kids? What, how can they use that time between their junior and senior year?
Yeah. So again, at some point, all of the students who apply to certain schools are going to be similar academically. Mm-hmm. So in order to stand out, it is smart to do something that you are passionate about in the summers, because that's typically when kids have the most time. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't done something all year that you were really excited about, then I think summer is a good time to stand out. And again, that might mean you're going back to work at a camp that you CIT'd at, or that you went to for years and years before that. It might mean doing a research project if you're that kind of kid. It might be babysitting for siblings because your mom needs childcare. It might mean running a marathon. I saw one of my kids, with their dad, they just did like a Tough Mudder type of thing. You know, training for something, doing something you're excited about, volunteering a big amount of hours to a cause that's really personal to you. Those are all amazing things. There isn't one amazing thing to do.
Right.
But that junior summer, you definitely need to be doing something. Do not be just chilling at the beach, because while that's great to be a kid and we all need some downtime, you need to have something meaningful to say in your applications about what you did in this last summer, mm-hmm, before you apply. It is also the time when you should be filling out your applications. It is also the time you should be writing your Common App essay or your personal statement. In August, you'll be able to get all the supplemental essays once the Common application re-ups and reopens. That's when supplements become available. So it's a big work time for kids also, as far as doing the work to apply to colleges.
So that leads right into the senior year. So I was going to ask you what the most important part of senior year is, but it sounds like it is the actual application process, right?
Yeah. I mean, the beginning, to me, the beginning of senior year should be really about the application process. I think the early bird catches the worm. So I am a big fan of students who have finished their testing, who have strong grades in 9th, 10th, and 11th grade, and don't really need to show their 12th grade grades as part of their overall application. I think applying early action or early decision is the way to go, because then you're done, you know, in most cases by November with filling out the applications. There, of course, that's not the only time that you can apply. You can apply all the way through January, sometimes February, or even March, depending on the school. But I don't want the whole senior year to be about college applications. I think the kids do need a break. So I like to be done by November, get everything in by those early action or early decision deadlines, and know that then kids are just waiting and then following up on if they need to send any more information. And then after that, it is about keeping your grades strong in rigorous classes, because there is a very good likelihood that colleges are going to ask you for your first or second marking period grades, and they will 100% ask you for your final transcripts at the school that you enroll at. So if your grades go down, they can withdraw your acceptance.
Whoa, that's what I was going to ask you, because so many seniors are kind of like, yeah, I've already applied, I'm going to such and such, it's time to play. And yeah, that is not true.
You know, if your grades go down a tiny bit, the college is not going to notice or withdraw your admission. However, if you're an A student who starts getting D's, or you're an A student who all of a sudden is getting C's, or you fail a class, they will come back to you when they get that transcript and they will ask you questions about it. And there is a likelihood that they can withdraw their acceptance. So senioritis, yeah, second half of senior year, definitely I want kids to enjoy themselves. I want them to enjoy senior trips and prom and yearbook and pep rallies and all of those things. Enjoy those friends before, you know, they're going to leave for college. But I really don't advise, you know, full-fledged Ferris Bueller type of senioritis.
So as far as applying to schools go, I mean, there's so many different parts of it. What's your best advice on applications and getting those done?
Excuse me. My best advice is start early.
Okay.
Get done early, because anything can happen. I say this all the time. I tell my kids all the time. Things happen. So multiple things have happened. You know, you can have a hurricane, you can get COVID, your power can go out. So it's really important that you start the process early. You can begin to fill out the common application anytime in your junior year if you want. So you can get basic, so you can open an account and get basic information in there, name, birthday, where your parents went to college. You can even start to fill out some activities. The Common App will close at the end of July. It will reopen on August 1st. Everything that I just mentioned will roll over to the new version. Basic information will roll over when August 1st starts. Do not go in and fill out college's supplemental stuff, because that will not roll over. Those things change. But on August 1st, the colleges that you want to apply to will open their supplements. And at that time, you can begin filling those out and you can look for more essays. But in January, February, March of your junior year, I strongly suggest opening that account, looking at the Common App essay prompts, starting to think about what you would want to write for your main college essay, creating a resume that can be used to help guide you in your activity section, and also can be used to ask teachers for teacher recommendations at the end of junior year. Those are all things that in junior year will keep you doing things, like I said before, small goals parents can set for a student. And they can all get done little by little, so that August 1st, it's not a whirlwind.
Right. Mm-hmm. Not overwhelming. Yeah.
Half the things. And I think that's really important. And then as those other essay prompts become available, why do you want to go to this school? What was your most meaningful activity? Tell us a funny story about you. What's your favorite word? Whatever college asks you at that point, then you know what wasn't in your Common App essay. And you can address that in another essay. So if by August you're halfway done, you're in great shape.
Right, right. How many schools do you think that students should apply to?
So that's a great question, because it's very personal for most kids. I find an average amount of schools is 10. So some kids will have 5 or 6 or 7 because they're kind of sure where they want to go, or they've got very strict parameters for where they want to go. Other kids will have, you know, 20 because they are going to cast a really wide net because they're not really 100% sure where they want to go or where they're going to get in. I think if you do your due diligence really well in junior year, 10 or 12 is a perfect number. You'll know that you've got maybe 1 or 2 reach schools that could possibly be an early decision choice or an early decision 2, which is binding. Then you would have, you know, maybe six or eight that are target schools that are all kind of hopefully a good match for you, but we're not 100% sure you'll get into them, but hopefully you would get into some. And then one or two likely schools that have a pretty good admit rate over 60, 70, 80%, so that we're pretty sure you're going to get in. Maybe you'll get some merit money, you'll get into an honors program, something like that. And that's how I like to develop a list. Other kids like to be reach heavy. I think that's a lot of work for a very little payoff. I don't also think it should be super safe heavy, right? Super likely heavy, because you do want to challenge yourself. I love target schools. I think having a big meat and potatoes middle is great for most kids, but you do have to be aware. Is it direct admit to your major? Is there a pathway to getting into that major if you're not admitted directly? So for business, for example, can you get in? For engineering, can you get in? For nursing, can you get in if you're not directly admitted? And also building a list that represents those possibilities so that you know if you only want to go to school, if you're a direct admit business major, if you're starting on day one, or if you're a direct admit nursing major or a direct admit engineering major, then you have to make sure that you have a list that reflects that possibility, mm-hmm. you know, that all the schools that you're applying to won't just admit you as undecided or pre that major.
So I know a lot of kids, they will apply to several schools, but they all have that one that they really want to go to. What if they don't get into the one that they want to get into? What's the best piece of advice to those kids?
Yeah, that's probably the hardest part of my job, right? Is thinking that a student might not have gotten what they dreamed they wanted. But I really do believe, and this doesn't help kids, you know, but I do believe, and I have seen over 16 years of doing this job, that it really does all work out in the end. I have, after working with thousands of kids over the years, I have not ever seen a kid who didn't really like the choice or where they ended up. One or two or three might have transferred for maybe an academic reason or a roommate reason, but it would not have been that they couldn't have been happy there. It was just that they thought they could be happy somewhere else. I see in the majority of students that where they go, they are happy. They find their friends. College is fun. They're having a good time. If they're in a good place for their major, they're getting a good education, they're coming out with jobs, and it really does work out in the end. But, you know, you do need to be prepared for those scenarios. And I think that not putting a lot of emphasis on those dream schools and making sure that you, every time you visit a school, see a reach, a target, and a likely in those same areas to show kids that, hey, if it's a particular city you want to be in or a state you want to be in or a team you want to root for, you can do that at a lot of different places. So I think that's really important, is showing them a lot of things so that they're not utterly disappointed. I think also not putting our own expectations on them. Like, you know, I mentioned a bunch of times when we've spoken in the past, you know, I think that a lot of parents have their expectations and they feel disappointment also. And I think that's really important not to share with them. But to maximize a chance of getting into an early decision school or a first choice school, if a school offers early decision, which is binding, and it is a smart financial choice, and it is possible for your family, then I say, use your best shot. Apply early decision one or apply early decision two, because colleges do accept most kids from their class, some schools 30%, 40%, 50%, 60%. There are schools that are admitting over 75% of their class in those early decision rounds. So if your student is in love with a particular school, a dream school, and it makes financial sense for your family, because you can't guarantee that you'll get any money in early decision, but if it makes financial sense for your family, then I say try the early decision ticket and see if it works.
See if it works. So what if your kid has gone through all of this and has applied, and then they're just kind of like, I don't know if I want to go to college, or I may want to take a year off in between. How do we as parents deal with that situation? Because it's obviously been our dream for them to go to college.
Exactly. So again, very, very gently. Yeah. I think that in that scenario, if a student comes to you and says, I'm not really 100% sure that I want to go, then you need to sit down and figure out, okay, what's your plan? What will you do? So will you take a gap year and then defer your admission to another, to one of the schools that you've been admitted to and have a plan to go in a year? Will you defer your admission and travel or do something, you know, amazing if you can? Will you do research somewhere? Or are you not sure at all about any of the schools that you've been admitted to and you might want to not accept your seat at one of those schools and go to community college while you think about a plan, or work and go to community college, or work and learn a trade? I think that's really important. Also, we have to remember that, you know, there are so many careers out there. Kids don't have to go to college to be successful. They can be successful without going to college, but we're trying to offer them all the options, right? And show them that we're there, we're behind them, and whatever they decide, as long as they have a plan. I do not think that living in mom's basement and, you know, watching Netflix all day is a plan. So, you know, you need
not
to
have a viable one anyway.
Yeah, exactly. We need to have, you know, a real clear plan as a family on what our expectations are. If you're going to be living at home, you know, what do we expect of you? Are you going to have to contribute? You know, are you going to live rent free? Are you going to have to go to community college? Are you going to have a job? What's going to be your plan? Because, you know, I do think kids are overwhelmed and they're a little anxious right now and they get a little scared. So my plan also in that scenario would be put a deposit on one of those colleges, because if they're saying in senior year, January, February, March, April, they still could decide in May, June, July, or August that they're ready to go. And having a seat at those schools is not a terrible idea.
Yeah. So you've mentioned some things that the parents can do for seniors, but that's my next question. This is a big time for the kids. The junior year is a big year, but the senior year and supporting them and getting ready for the next step. What can parents of seniors do?
So parents of seniors, this, I have a thing that I tell all my seniors. So it's kind of my four P's. So be purposeful, right? We want to create a list based on true family parameters, right? Make a smart list, be honest with your kids, have all of those things that we talked about, from likelies to targets to reaches, have a well-rounded list, make sure that you are speaking to your student honestly about finances and about your family's parameters. So purpose. Be prepared. It's going to be a long year. There have been historically over the last couple of years more and more deferrals by schools, which means they're asking for more information. They're putting you into a later round where they're going to look at a bigger group of kids. There have been more wait lists than ever. So that could even go beyond May. There are going to be disappointments. Kids are going to get rejections. It's very common now. So I think that if you're prepared for all of that and your student is prepared for all of that, it's easier to deal with them and to say, hey, we know we might have to send some more information. We know we might need to get another recommendation, and this teacher would be great to do it, or your coach would be great to do it. And you're prepared. You've got some things in your back pocket ready to go. Be positive. That's my third P, right? Look at everything that your student has achieved. It's amazing. Look at every yes with a yes, hooray, we did it. We got a yes. And it doesn't matter that it was your safest school or that that school admits 80% of kids. You're going to college. That's an amazing thing, right? So be really positive. Every yes should be celebrated, in my opinion. Every small achievement should be celebrated. And then be proud because you raised amazing humans and they are about to go out into the world and be self-sufficient. So I think that if you let them know that you're proud of them and you really are proud of them and we should celebrate each other, you know, celebrate the other moms and celebrate the other dads and the grandparents, everybody that helped them kind of get to this part of their lives. I think that those are the best ways to support our kids through senior year, because by the end of the year, there's going to be a lot of tears. They're leaving you. And I think that if you can do all of those things, it will make your life easier, less stressful, and truthfully happier.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. So where can people find you? What do you have going on? What do you have going on now since I talked to you last time?
So since I spoke to you last time, we opened College Mornings Combos, which is a Facebook page that's private, subscription-based to help more families along the journey. So rather than one-on-one private consulting, which is what I typically do, I have now opened this private Facebook page that people can pay to join. And every month we do a Zoom webinar and I teach a lesson on the college applications process. People can post questions on the discussion board. I will answer them. The subscription includes a 1 hour private meeting with me before you get started. So I will know you and your student. And I can really give you great advice that way rather than just generalized advice. So that's my newest project that I'm really excited for. And you can find more information about that right on collegemarnie.com.
And this is an awesome time to join that membership too. I mean, this is right at the beginning, going back to school for juniors and seniors. I mean, there's a lot for each of those years to be doing. So
yeah, this is actually the perfect time to be joining for either one of those groups. And we're addressing everybody's questions. So if you're just going to be a rising junior, we're addressing those lessons. And if you're a rising senior, we're addressing those lessons. And we're also, there are some younger kids even who are asking questions and parents of younger students who are asking questions because it's good to have more information and be prepared.
Sure. And I'm sure it's a community too. So other people can chime in and answer questions that people have. And
exactly. It's a community and they can share information. Yeah. About the seats that they live in. You know, sometimes a mom will ask a question about a particular state. They can ask, you know, what the rule in that state is, and another mom will chime in and answer for another student. So it's as a family, you join the page. So the moms, the dads, the kids, everybody can be on there. Everybody has access to the page and they can ask whatever questions they want. And I'm answering every single day.
Great. What an amazing way to share information that you may already have. You know, you don't want anybody out there scrounging around for an answer that you have so readily.
Exactly. And, you know, there's so many opinions out there, right? So if you can get at least an expert opinion that is specific to your child, you know, that I think is what makes us a little bit different. There's a lot of big Facebook groups out there where people can crowdsource information. But because I'm doing that one-on-one with kids and their families, I know their story. In an hour, I can gather a ton of information. I can know about the kid. And when they ask a question, I know the right information to tell them.
Yeah, that's awesome. And also, I know on your Instagram, you've been having some campus takeovers. Tell us about those a little bit.
Oh, yeah, they're amazing. We did almost 20 in the spring, College Mornings campus crew takeovers. And I used my past clients on college campuses to share their day in a life at their campus. So we haven't done any in the summer because the kids are home, but starting back in August, we're going to do more schools, and we welcome people to follow Instagram, ask questions, ask what it's like to be a student at the school that we're highlighting that day. The kids are dying to answer things. They love when they get interaction. They want questions. They're actually also available. If you watch on the highlights, they all share their Instagram. And also I can share questions. So if there's a school that you're interested in and you see something and you want more information, those are my ambassadors on those campuses, and they are happy to answer. So if you've got a question, just drop it in, you know, either a direct message or right on my Instagram page, and we will make sure that you get an answer to your question. But in the fall, we're going to start it up again. And kids are sharing, you know, their favorite places to eat and what it looks like where they live and how accessible are the professors and what do they do for social life? Is it hard to travel? Do most of their friends come from different states? So tons of information.
All that information you can't find online anywhere.
No, you know, this is like a real person. You can see a face. Right. You can hear what it's really like to go to school there. And they're telling the good, the bad, the dirty, you know, we did Texas last year, the last one I think was Texas, and somebody asked, where do you get those cowboy boots? I mean, they're really sharing all their little details. So is it hard to get in a sorority or a fraternity? You know, do you have to be in a sorority or fraternity? Does everybody go to the games? What's the social life like? And these are people that I trust. They're kids that I've worked with. So they're my campus crew, and I'm loving them. And we have gotten so much amazing feedback. And actually, the campus crew and their parents are going to be doing parts of our live recordings over the next couple of months in the Facebook group.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. All right. So everybody
needs. We're connecting everybody.
Yeah. So to become part of that group, do they go to your website? And is there?
Yeah, if they go to the website. Yep. If they go to my website, collegemarnie.com.
Okay.
They will be able to contact me. It's described there. Mm-hmm. You can contact me for more information. There's a contact sheet right on the website, and I'll get an email right away, and I'll explain to them how to get into the group, and they can be started in the next, you know, couple of days.
Awesome. Okay. So what's your best piece of advice to parents who have kids that are juniors or seniors? Your absolute best piece of advice.
Breathe.
Breathe. One word, breathe.
Breathe. There are going to be a lot of times that you hate your kids in the next and you're going to get frustrated. It's a long process. It is a marathon, not a sprint. Breathe through it. Don't hate your kids. They are just as nervous about this process as we are. And I really think that, again, if we just put ourselves in their position and understand that they're not doing it because they're lazy, or they're not looking at colleges because they're lazy. They're not doing it because they're a little nervous about it and they don't know exactly how to get started. So if you can guide them, if you can get them started, that's great. Don't push them. Don't ruin every family dinner by nagging all the time. I know this because I did this with my own daughter. It was I actually had to make appointments for her to come in this office and meet with me as if she had hired me, because I would talk about it all the time. So I know that it doesn't work well that way. So I really think that if you can just guide your child with love and grace and patience and understanding that it is all going to work out in the end, to me, that's the best thing that you can do. Breathe, talk to your friends, you know, vent to them. Don't vent to your kid every single solitary day.
Yeah, that's really good advice too. Oh, well, Marty, this has been awesome. I know that all the junior, seniors, and parents of those kids are going to have a great year. And there's a lot to do, but then parents, they're gone. So you need to enjoy this time with them because
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you know, that's the whole thing. Just, you're going to be hysterical crying when you drop them off at college, even if they are going to college 10 minutes up the road from your house, you will be hysterical crying when they leave. So in all the frustrating moments, just try to breathe, know that it's going to work out, enjoy these kids, because it's a big accomplishment what we've done, you know, to raise amazing humans. And I think that, you know, we deserve to enjoy them.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you so much, Marnie. It's been awesome.
It's my pleasure. I will come back anytime. I love talking about
I'm going to have you back.
Well, anytime, you just let me know. And if anybody has questions, they can reach out to me. I'm always happy to answer.
Awesome. A big thank you to Marnie for joining me again on the podcast to talk about the junior and senior years in high school and all of the things that the students and their parents need to be focusing on in these years. It is a crazy process. I've done it twice. And knowing the steps to take and then the order in which they should be done is so incredibly helpful. It's not shortcutting. It's lessening the time of the learning curve. And knowing that there are people out there that can answer the question you have will put your mind at ease. Trust me. There are just way too many takeaways and great advice for me to recap from this episode. So I encourage you to go back and listen again. Or I've created a little takeaway cheat sheet that you can read and use. And I will put the link to that in the show notes. So go grab that so that you have something tangible in your hand that you can refer to. And remember to find Marnie and get all the information on joining her College Marnie Convos that are happening now. Marnie's website and Instagram handle for following the College Marnie campus takeovers are in the show notes as well. I hope that all of you parents and your students have an amazing school year. And like Marnie said, breathe. These years fly by so fast. So, you know, don't waste them by being stressed. Because if you're stressed, then your student is going to be stressed. Formulate a plan and then work the plan. Share this episode with a friend that can use it. That's what it's here for. And make sure to rate or review this podcast so that Marnie and I know that you have found it useful. We thank you for that. Next week in the series, we're going to be talking with Moira McCullough from College Scoops about college visits. Everything from A to Z for your student and for parents. So be sure to join us next Wednesday for that. Remember, as the school year starts, show as much compassion to others as you yourself need today. The world is very stressful on all of us today, and showing compassion to others is the best way to make it a better place and a less stressful place for everybody. Till next time, everybody. Much love. See ya.